Good morning, Unchurched. This is Dr. Deborah again. So we're still getting to know each other, and I think it's only fair that I tell you who I am every time we talk. Because we got to admit, there are lots of different kinds of belief systems in the world, lots of different kinds of people with different motives for doing what they do. So I have to keep courting you, not to get you on my side, but to let you hear who I am so you can know whether you want to keep listening. That's the bottom line. If there's something here that would be useful for you in your own life, in your own walk, how you do your thing. So where I stand, one of the things that makes this so difficult for me is I'm a lover, not a fighter. I don't fight people. I prefer not to argue. I like to talk sensibly, sit down, listen to you, have you listen to me, and we, the two of us, the three of us, how many of us are there, just sit there and make sense of what's going on. That's the way I do things. And so one of the reasons why this has been a long time coming is because I did not want to spout all kinds of negativity about anything or anybody, and definitely not the church. I know we need the church in this world. I know that. But I also know that there is more than one way to be in the world that's good, that's godly, godlike. I like the godlike word. So since I've just mentioned godlikeness, let me just talk about God. One of the things that I always say is that based on our understanding of gender, God is not a man. God is not a woman. Or not male or female, not masculine or feminine. God is everything. So if God had these qualities, he'd have them all. And notice I said he, because that's the way I was raised to think. Sometimes I'm going to say she, because I remind myself that God is not a man. God is not a he. But very arrogantly and very egotistical, and I have to acknowledge this, I will say if God had a gender, God would be a woman. Because those qualities are, to me, are more like God's heart. If you think about your mother and your grandmother and the purest examples of what it means to be sacrificial and giving, you will eventually find yourself thinking about a female. But again, like I said, God doesn't have gender. God has both. You notice that he again, God has both. So since God is all things. And in all things, I believe, then we have to figure out how we embody that allness of God, the goodness of God, the God-likeness of God. And that's one of the reasons why I am unchurched, because I know there's more than one way to do God, be God, live God, and that expression is limiting and limited. As far as I'm concerned. So we're unchurched because we are outside of the wall. I am unchurched because I am outside of the walls of the establishment. And back in the 60s, that used to be a four-letter word. But I'm outside of those walls because I want to express God-likeness in every way I can possibly do it. And I would like to do that without sending people to hell. I would like to do that without making people feel like there's something wrong with them. Because if there's one thing I learned as I trained to be a therapist, is that people do what they do for very good reasons. I don't care how bad it is. And to me, that is so like God. That's grace. And grace is something I think is too underrated, except for when we get in trouble ourselves. But when it's necessary to give it to somebody else, then we struggle to do that. And I dig that. I'm a 60s girl. I dig it because I know that some things that people do seems just unforgivable. How could you do that to anybody? How could you do that to a baby? How could you do that to a child? How could you be that way toward someone who's weaker than you? In whatever kind of weakness that is, it could be intellectual, it could be physical, it could be whatever. How could you mistreat somebody? And so I'm inviting, and invitation is a word I'll use a lot because I know that you can't make people do anything, whether you invite them or force them. You can't make them. The joke comes to me, and somebody is making a kid sit down, and he says, I may be sitting down in my body, but in my mind, I'm standing up, because you can't make people do what they really don't want to do and express it and feel it and be authentic. So God is an authentically loving, gracious spirit, power. And that likeness of God is the one that you can't force and you can't put in a box, and it has to be expressed. And in every kind of way, you know, I know back in the day, you know, when I was growing up, being, you know, knowing your astrological sign was really a hip thing to do. And I, you know, like everyone else, I discovered I was a Virgo based on my birthday. And don't argue with me. It's on the 22nd of September, and they say I'm on the cusp, but I just don't feel Libra. I don't feel it in my bones. I don't feel it in my behavior. If there's truth to that, and I believe there's some truth to it. But I said it to say it's perfectionism is a Virgo trait. And I am very perfectionistic when it comes to how I act, how I behave. My mother has a lot to do with that. That's the way she trained me to be a good girl, a nice girl. But I started to embrace that and embody it, because to me, it was just a better way to be. And so I want to be the best person I can be. And I want to identify with a God that is gracious and loving, and a people who is that same thing. So being like God does not mean that I do something once or twice a week and that signifies that I'm connected to God. Being like God means every move I make, every breath I take, everything I do, from walking down the street, speaking to people I don't know, to allowing people to get over it when I'm driving instead of speeding up so they can't get over. Just every little opportunity, every perfectionistic moment I can grab from me, I try to grab it. And when I hear myself, see myself, feel myself doing the things that I know are not God-like, I am in the moment convicted. Now, that conviction is not guilt. That conviction is not, oh my goodness. That conviction is, girl, look at you. That's all it is. And redirection is what it is. Redirection. I see what I'm doing. I know it's not right. I know it in the moment. And I change courses if I can. And if I can't change courses and I'm too far gone, this did or said something, I will find you. And you will think I'm crazy for even asking you. Did I step on your toe on August 25th, 1972? You was like, I don't even remember that. Well, see, it ain't about you, is about me. I remember, and I was wrong, and I'm sorry. So that's the perfectionistic. And I guess when I hear myself saying that, I would have to say that's the being, that's the spirit of God, the spirit that wants to love and wants peace and wants harmony. So that's me on the God tip. And so I have friends who are agnostic and atheists. And I'm always hearing of people who are those things, who change their minds. And I can see how they would. And not because they almost died or they died and then they saw something that let them know that we're bigger than whatever. Because something in us, the soul, and I'll talk about the soul one day, but the spirit, This sound that's coming out of my body is connected to, this is my belief, y'all, something bigger some immense. That something is what causes agnostics, atheists, just evil people on some level to just say, and okay, guys, I'm not calling agnostics and atheists evil. I'm just saying people who are separated from God, who don't believe in God, causes these people to reconnect with that. And somehow along their way in their lives, something, somebody did something, said something, taught them something to the contrary, taught them to call that voice in their, I would say it's in their chest, maybe in their gut, and their chest, their heart is there, but something that's maybe in their veins, maybe in their blood, maybe in their breath, caused them to ignore that, denounce that, discount it. And so, but then something, and it could be a blade of grass, it could be a bird flying in the sky, it could be water in a cup that starts to chip away at this, that understanding that they have, that they are God, or that there is nothing greater than them or than human beings, or whatever it is that they think so much of, because the nature of us appears to be that we will find something to worship, whether it's books on the shelf or the words inside those books, whether it's the blood that runs through your veins and nourishes your body and cleans your I was thinking about, you know, blood, burnt fat burning nature of blood. Just all of the, you will find something to worship. That's just kind of what humans do. And so in our search for something bigger than us, because we know our shortcomings, I don't care how cool, how bright, how brilliant we think we are very much in touch with what we don't know and what we aren't. So somewhere, at some point, they get connected to the omniscience, the omnipresence, the immutable part of them that never dies, that inhabits their bodies. And so I get it. And my goal here with this, with you, is just to, I guess, be a reminder of that in us, and then help us to think about what can we do, how can we be in this world to spread that, because we know the world we live in, and I'm sure every generation has said this, what's this world coming to? But I'm in this one, and that's the question I have to ask when I look around and I see some of the things that we do to the weak, that we do to ourselves, the minor things that we do to each other, the exclusionary behavior that we've always had. And then all of the struggles that we have internally that we don't acknowledge and we don't find some healing for. So this platform is about always reminding us who we are and our connection to the divine, to God, our father, our mother, our grandmother, the progenitor of all things, connecting to that and understanding what we could be doing to spread that. That's what this is about. And unchurched is just a way of saying this is different from that. That's the primary thing. It's different from that. And so, and I said it before, and I will say it every time it comes to my mind. If that's what you do, if that's what works for you, then I am not suggesting that you change anything. I'm just saying if you're not doing that and you don't have a community, someone that mirrors your heart, because that's what the church is. It's a fellowship. Then this is one. And so I'll be talking about God as I have today, but not as much, because I would like to spend our time understanding who we know God to be and then being that in the world. So at this point in our chat, I want to talk about how every day, every opportunity, there is a lesson to be learned, and there is something to, there's a growth that should be taking place in your life. And I know that many people read a book, that could be the Bible, or they go to some study, or they go to some group, or they go to therapy. They do something because they're trying to fix something that's broken. And I'm offering that there's always something to be fixed that is broken. And so how then do you find that something? Because you don't go to church and hear a sermon every Sunday, or you may not even listen to preachers on TV. You may not even go to workshops or conferences that would teach you how to be a better person. But life is always teaching you to be that better person. And all you have to do is pay attention to life. Pay attention to your thoughts. Pay attention to what people are doing, saying around you, to you. And then engaging, getting in touch with what these words and actions are impressing upon you. What they are impressing upon you. And so think now with me. What can you learn today? What should you have learned yesterday? What happened? What happened? I had a conversation with an acquaintance of mine, and we were just talking, and I'm listening to her, and she's talking, telling me things, and I'm you know, trying to stay connected to her, because sometimes I find myself when I'm listening to someone, they may say something that stays with me, and I might just kind of, it hangs on to me, so I'm kind of thinking about that thing while they're still talking. So I have to keep myself in the present moment when I'm listening, especially when you say something that resonates with me. But as I move on to talk about that, one thing that I am learning, and quite honestly, I'm getting more and more connected to when God is talking to me. Because quite honestly, I think God is talking to me when I find myself transgressing, you know, doing the thing that I know I shouldn't be doing, or not doing the thing that I know I should be doing. Mainly speaking to somebody who I know is not going to speak back to me, because they've shown me over and over that they're not going to speak. They turn their eyes away to keep from speaking, and sometimes I let them go. But then sometimes something says speak, and I do. So that's a lesson. To pay attention when you know how people say my first mind, my gut told me that listening to that voice sometimes is difficult because we've taken that voice for granted. So lessons. So that's one lesson. But also sometimes it's hard to say difficult things, something that I know people don't want to hear. The person I'm talking to may not want to hear, but I know it's something I have to say. I struggle to do that. And then in those moments is when I really just kind of am prayerful. I try to do it before I start talking, but I definitely do it while I'm talking. And that is to just kind of get a sense of what I should do, what I should say, what I should do and what I should say. And be prepared to live with what comes from that. So as you think about what it is you can learn today, what can life teach you today, what challenges will come your way as a lesson. And it's not just to know. That's the whole point of being unchurched. It is not just to know. It is to do. So once you know something, that's all well and good. I mean, I can say I'm a therapist. So we're not just setting goals just to set the goals. We're not just talking about these things just to talk about them. We're talking about them so that we can do something different, so that we can find ourselves the next time we find ourselves in that moment, in that situation, we can do something that's radically different, something that's significantly different from that thing that we normally would have done. I just talked about speaking to people. It could be about when you're talking to someone and you're trying to make your point and they're trying to make their point, and this is just a regular conversation, this is not an argument, but you notice that they start talking when you start talking, that means they're not listening. Then that means you need to shut up and listen. That means you need to just let them talk, because clearly they need to. Clearly they need to. And what your job becomes in that moment is to be available to them. And know that there's nothing you were going to say that was necessary in that moment, so necessary that you would keep talking over them and they keep talking over you. Your job in that moment is just to stop talking. That's a lesson. And then the next time you find yourself in a conversation like that, you're just as excited about the conversation as that person is, but they talk over you. And if they don't stop themselves, then that becomes, and you know it's something you want to share because you want to be, that's why they call it a conversation. Both of y'all talking. So then you might have to say, okay, I'm going to listen when you talk, but when I talk, I need you to listen because I want you to hear what I have to say too. You can say that. And they're going to say, oh, my bad, because they're just excited too. And then they're just used to talking. And then again, they might be a person who live along that don't get to talk to people much. So you got to consider all of that. And this is all godliness, godlikeness. You give more than you take. And when you can offer something that you think would be helpful, you can do it. You can offer it. So that's the value of learning. How many sermons in your life have you heard? And I would mention this on occasion. How many? I've heard a whole lot of sermons. Some of them I remember, some of them I don't. But one thing I do know in my 40 plus years of or more of going to church and being heavily involved in church is that you hear a lot of the same stories, but they have different messages. And so my question, and this might be for somebody who attends church, because I can imagine y'all going to eavesdrop. How much have you changed as a result from listening to those sermons? Can you mark on one hand the number of times you heard a sermon and it changed you so much? You changed your life in response to it so much that you can list, I stopped lying so much. I started listening better. I started to give more to other people. Can you mark the sermons, the times that you heard something across the pulpit, on some podium someplace, that you decided that you were going to do something else and not be that other person in that way? Because it's going to always be something. I offer therapy for a lifetime to clients who are willing to invest in themselves, because I know it's going to always be something. So think about that. And my thing is, I don't remember the last time. I don't remember when I just stopped going to church. I do not remember what year that was, because I wasn't trying to, I wasn't thinking about it like that. I just knew it was time for me to do something else. And I think it's because I had this soapbox that I'm on right now, is how many more times do I have to hear about the woman at the well, or Daniel in the lion's den, or the crucifixion and the resurrection before I become resurrected myself? How many times do I have to hear that before I decide that I'm going to be a different kind of person, different kind of mother, different kind of wife, different kind of sister, different kind of friend, different kind of therapist about this particular thing, whatever it is? I'm trying to think myself. And when I think about it, I realize that I was responding to the spirit in me. Whenever I changed something, I responded to the spirit in me. So you can hear a sermon all day long. You can even hear them in your mind and in your heart all day, not in front of somebody who's on a podium. And you still have to make a decision that you are going to be a different person because of it. Spirit does not make you do anything. It compels you, and maybe in some strong ways, but still you have to stand up to yourself and do that thing, whatever it is, or stop doing that thing, whatever it is. And as I say this, I've always wondered, I guess I'm really, you getting to know me, why does sexual intercourse, whatever kind it is, why does it hold so much? It's like you have not sinned until you have sex with the wrong person at the wrong time in the wrong way. And we're talking in public, because Lord knows what we do when nobody is not around. Only God knows what we do when nobody else is around. So why is it that? Why is that? You know, they ask people to leave their jobs, step down from offices, because they had sex with somebody. Because they were sexually inappropriate. Why does it hold so much weight? It's just a question of mine. Because you can slap me, and in the largest thing sense of things, it won't have the same consequences if you raped me in the largest scheme of things. But in the largest scheme of things, it's just as wrong. If it's wrong at all, it's wrong. So there's no end to that. So why do we put so much currency in that act? And my guess off the top of my head is that we created a narrative around it. And so we have we continue to live up to it. Because there are people who let's just use the idea of rape, men and women, and they didn't go and rape somebody else. They didn't go and molest someone else. They made a decision that they wouldn't do that to someone. And the ones that do, they bought into the narrative. This is just me. Into the narrative that this was a terrible thing, and I'm going to punish somebody for doing this to me. And so I would ask you the question, where is the God-likeness in any of that? In the narrative around sex, in the positive or negative, where is the God-likeness? And so can you see, this is what I've been doing. I've been thinking about these things because I know that God is bigger than all of this. And how then can we put ourselves in a space where we see the bigness of God? See the bigness of God. See how we could create some new narratives around all of this stuff, overcome it, become different kind of people toward ourselves and toward each other. And maybe my affinity for healing, being a psychotherapist, healer of the soul, maybe that's why I'm asking these questions, because that's my call in the world. And I know that it is. I know that it is. I'm here to heal some souls. And I'm here to say that healing can take place anywhere in the universe, in your bedroom, on your patio, while you're swimming, snorkeling, flying a plane, whatever it is you do, that healing can take place because you have the capacity within you to do that. So that's me. Those are my ideas. Those are my thoughts. That's what brought me to this place. I know I'm not the only one. There's too many people in the world for me to be the only one who values this unchurched idea. So, friends and neighbors, dissenters, affirming people out there, I am Dr. Deborah. And unchurched means that you take that spirit of God likeness, everywhere you go and everything you do, and you make it your business to learn how to be the God likeness that's in you. And one of the things that we are coming to is lessons about how to love. But but not until we set the groundwork for what in the world unchurchedness is. And so I'm on you. You're going to join the Facebook group. And we are going to have some wonderful conversations. Until next time, this has been Dr. Deborah, and